Maria, Naram Seva Narottamam, Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam, Todayam Udhidhaye. The 15th chapter, verse 42. I welcome all of you. I'm aware that we have also many invisible listeners today who are joining us on the internet. Welcome also to you. Let me just see if somewhere, I'm the only one who has a text. It's not projected anywhere.
It will be.
It will be. So please read. It's in the process or? Yeah. 7:15:42. Can already start. Aksham Dasha Dhanam Adharma Dharmo Chakre vimanam ratinam cha jivam Anurhitasya pranavam patanti Sharanam tu jivam parameva lakshyam Aksham dasha prana dharma dharmo Chakre vimanam ratinam cha jivam Dhanurhitasya pranavam patanti Saram tu jivam parameva lakshyam Because of limited time, I request one of you to chant already now.
Aksham dasha pranam adama dhamma
Aksham dasha pranam adama dhamma
the bow. He indeed. Tasya. His. Pranavam. The Vedic mantra Omkara. Patanti. It is said. Sharam. An arrow. To. But. Jivam. The living entity. Param. The Supreme Lord. Deva. Indeed. Lakshyam. The target. Thank you. It is a little difficult, the text, so you will need to wipe off all the sleepiness of your brain and be concentrated. The 10 kinds of error acting within the body are compared to the spokes of the chariot's wheels. And the top and bottom of the wheel itself are called religion and irreligion. The living entity in the bodily concept of life is the owner of the chariot. Okay, till here, let us understand. It talks about the material body, which is like compared to a vehicle, a chariot. And the living entity is riding on that chariot. Now it will talk about a second subject, the destination of that journey of life. The Vedic mantra pranava is the goal. The pure living entity himself is the arrow, and the target is the Supreme Being. Once again, the context. We as living entities are on a chariot made of material elements, and a recommendation is given in the Bhagavatam how we can make our life's journey successful by reaching the supreme target through mantra meditation. Mantra pranavam, the sacred mantra om, is the means, the upaya, like a bow is the means to transport an arrow to a faraway destination. The mantra is the upaya, the means, which can also move us in our life's journey to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse is a little cryptic, so it may be helpful to have this little translation in simple, in understandable. Well, the concepts are given, but that we discover them. So now please listen to the purport. The ten kinds of life there are always flowing within the material body. They are called prana, apana, samana, vyana, udana, naga, koma, krikala, devadatta, and dhananjaya. They are compared here to the spokes of the chariot's wheels. The life air is the energy for all of a living being's activities, which are sometimes religious and sometimes irreligious. Thus, religion and irreligion are said to be the upper and lower portions of the chariot's wheels. When the living entity decides to go back home, back to Godhead, his target is Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the conditioned state of life, one does not understand that the goal of life is the Supreme Lord. Na te vidu svata gatim i Vishnu durashaya ye bhagya arta manina. The living entity tries to be happy within this material world, not understanding the target of his life. When he is purified, however, he gives up his bodily conception of life and his false identity as belonging to a certain community, a certain nation, a certain society, a certain family, and so on. Sarvapadi viniyamuktam tatparadvena niyamalam. Then he takes the arrow of his purified life, and with the help of the bow, the transcendental chanting of pranava or the Hare Krishna mantra, he throws himself towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented that because the words bow and arrow are used in this verse, one might argue that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity have become enemies. Shooting myself at the Lord, is this friendly? However, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead may become the so-called enemy of the living being, this is his chivalrous pleasure. For example, the Lord fought with Bhishma, and when Bhishma pierced the Lord's body on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, this was a kind of humor or relationship, of which there are 12. When the conditioned soul tries to reach the Lord by hurling an arrow at him, the Lord takes pleasure, and the living entity gains the profit of going back home, back to Godhead. Another example given in this regard is that of Arjuna. As a result of piercing the Adharamina, or the fish within the chakra, he achieved the valuable gain of Draupadi. Now is a last verse. Kindly make an effort to really understand, because here is a summary of the subject. Similarly, if with the arrow of chanting the holy name of the Lord, one pierces Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, by dint of performing this heroic activity of devotional service, one receives the benefit of returning home, back to Godhead. Please join me in the pranam prayers. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachayane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyaye Satayane. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda of a bow which represents the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And here it's a beautiful piece of art, an arrow which is placed in the bow and then is reaching the supreme target of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it says on the back, the Vedic mantra is the bow, the pure divine entity is the arrow, and the target is the Supreme Being. And it has again taken the bow, the arrow, and the goal as the imagery. This was not my plan. It was happening on its own when I found Rasika Shiromani, the very talented organizational force behind all this. She said, "Maharaj, we wish you to talk on a verse." I said, "I have already prepared a lecture on another verse, and I'm a little foolish in such a short time to prepare another lecture. It will be difficult. Have mercy on me." Then she said, "What verse have you chosen, Maharaj?" I said, "You know, I chose the verse where the Bhagavatam tells us how we should chant by invoking a certain image." "Ha!" she said, "we chose the same verse for you, and we have produced a t-shirt on this verse." I said, "Well, this is very nice. Krishna seems to work. When devotees want to serve him, he somehow comes into the heart and he enlightens them and enlightens is maybe not a good word for this thing. He gives them the inspiration, and so we were in perfect," here comes my new American word, "we were in perfect sync." We were synced up by Krishna. So yes, this is a little bit the background of this verse. Now I would like to go through this Bhagavatam method with you and explain it to you in some practical verse ways, and if there is time, we will also make a little exercise on this so that we can really imbibe the teachings of the Bhagavatam and let it guide us in these immortal words into our ultimate destination. The first is when someone starts to chant, he must have a certain basis from which he starts. This is explained in a very important conversation between Haridas Thakur and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can imagine they would meet every day in Puri, where Mahaprabhu had given Haridas Thakur this place under the Siddha Bakuli tree. Some of us have visited. It is still there. This tree. And they would discuss certain things or topics, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur later, by what is called I hope I got it right, you know, the intuitive understanding, Vidusha Praman, it's called in Sanskrit, could pen this discussion down. And on one day, Haridas Thakur wanted to explain how the chanting can be successful. And he explained, "Sambandha tadvera jnana javat nahaya tavat se nama nama vanasa jivera ashraya. As long as the living entity does not understand his relationship with Lord Krishna, the individual soul will only take shelter of the shadow of the holy name, not the real holy name. It's called Namvalasa. However, he says, if one of those souls, by a saintly Vaishnava's mercy, understands his relationship with Lord Krishna and chants Lord Krishna's holy name, then he attains a great treasure of spiritual love, a treasure that is the essence of all religious activity. So, the idea is here, when you chant like the Mayavadis chant, without knowing who they are part of the Lord, but they got it confused. They think they are the Lord, they seem to themselves. That is what you sometimes hear in Kirtan concerts, where the leaders are not yet fully informed of what they do. Then they will say, this means singing to yourself. Hare Krishna. Okay. Then you have only the shadow of the holy name. You can't make the bhakti experience. It won't work for you. Similarly, if a devotee who thinks, well, I'm in the Hare Krishna movement, but he does not have an understanding of what is going on, who he is with the Lord, he's just mechanically singing something and hopes it's still soon over that he can take food, you know, then there's a shadow experience happening. It's not the real thing. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains what this means to have this real basis of sambandha. And he says, as a footnote, it means three meditations. I, an infinitesimal conscious being, am Lord Krishna's eternal servant. You know, this is how you start. I'm a servant here. I'm the servant of the Sadhu Sangha. I will chant for the Lord's pleasure. Yeah? Then, second meditation. Lord Krishna, the all-powerful conscious being, is my only master. The Lord is there. He's there. I sometimes say, if you want a real life, first you have to become real. Who are you? I am a small living entity. The Lord is my only master. It also means I'm not the body. It means I'm not what I'm thinking. It means for Sachinanda Swami, he is not a famous or infamous Swami in the Hare Krishna movement. He is a servant first of all of the Lord, a small living entity. This purification is necessary. Prabhupada, he says in the purport, Sarva Upadhi Viniyamuktam. Take all these upadis, all these designations which cover you, the pure soul. Take it away. Come to the point where you are really are a soul part of Krishna. Get this fog out of your head. Get the illusion away. In Hari Bhakti last year, any spiritual activity, it describes japa as one of them, will work only if someone practices to purify his consciousness. It's called Bhuta Shuddhi. This is the first step. In the text, Prabhupada said, he takes, the chanter, takes the arrow of his purified life And then, with the help of the bow, the transcendental chanting of the pranava or the Hare Krishna mantra, he throws himself, so nice, he throws himself towards the Supreme Personality of God in a genuine attempt of surrender. No? I remember when my physical father quarreled with Srila Prabhupada. He challenged him. I will not be able to tell about this. Don't worry, Prabhupada defeated him and he became very, very respectful towards Srila Prabhupada. My father was just angry that I had not become a big director, but a poor soul, a poor monk. And then my father, Prabhupada, pacified him and so on. In that same program, one other German man challenged Srila Prabhupada. He got up, really aggressive, and he said, "This is self-hypnotism. You chant and you..." No, very good. Hypnotized, withdraw from your consciousness and boom, you come in another consciousness which sometimes has its use also, but it's, I don't want to say this like that. But he meant it in a negative way. When you chant like this, you are just stunning yourself. You become hypnotized. Because he spoke so well English, someone had to translate it. Had to repeat the question or the challenge to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, very purely and innocent, said, "No, no, it's self-purification." He just answered like this. You have a wrong concept. It's not hypnotism. It is purification. This is what someone who enters the chanting has to understand. I live in the same room here in Sadhu Sangha with a famous temple president of Germany. And I asked him, "So how are you doing?" And he said, "No one knows me here. I don't know anyone. I feel a little lost." I said, "Good. Now you can start your spiritual life. That you detach yourself from the illusion of being something upadhi. Don't think only the materialists have it. We also, as long as we are not pure souls, are suffering from upadhis, from designations. I'm a big this, I'm a big that, I'm famous, and so on. It is necessary for a chanter of the holy name to purify his life. It is very necessary. It is must. It's the basis. Without that, your chanting remains shadowy." Shadowy is not in English, but it means like a shadow. It will not nourish you. Imagine the organization of Sadhu Sangha said, "You are so many people, you eat so much, it's so expensive. What we will do today is we will only offer you a shadow of the meal. This is more cost efficient for us." And they make a shadow, they make a pizza and then a light, and the pizza throws a shadow and says, "You can all come, it is inexhaustible pizza, the shadow, it will always be there. You want to go to your secret stash and eat from there. You would, and if you don't have anything, you would start begging the grihasthas, 'Can you feed me? I need a real meal.'" In the same way, we need real spiritual life, not the shadow. Otherwise, our material attachments will never leave us. It will just be a pious dream, that's all. So, this explaining to us very nicely these meditations. It starts with I am an infinitesimal, means very small, conscious being. I am Lord Krishna's eternal servant. Lord Krishna, the all-powerful conscious being, is my only master. And this dull and inert material world is a prison house meant to reform me. This is true knowledge of the individual soul, sambandha, or relationship with Lord Krishna. So when you chant with this faith and with this knowledge, the result of this chanting is that love for Krishna will arise. Devotion will arise in the heart. And your chanting will be a blessed chanting. Your stay here at Sadhu Sangha will be, a defining moment of your life. That is a new word I had to learn. It means your life before Sadhu Sangha and your life after Sadhu Sangha are different. Now you are really enriched in your spiritual practice. This is what you can learn here. By the way, it won't happen if you just buy a t-shirt. We sometimes are a little externally minded. What to do? We condition souls. You have to bring the t-shirt in your heart, the message in your heart, not just hear it on your skin. It has to come by practice. In chanting, practically it means you sit down, you center yourself, you understand what you are doing now, you are praising the Lord, you are chanting, and then you focus on the Lord. That's why we have deities here, so that you are facing the deities. I hope I'm not totally little. It's alright, I'm with my back to Tulsi. And then you chant, my dear devotees, for their pleasure. And as you do this, as you chant, and you focus yourself, the pure living entity, on the Lord, the mantra will act and it will just bring you to the lotus feet of Krishna. You won't be sitting there any longer if you chant. You will chant there. Or you will not be any longer in the material world, entangled with a mind full of concerns and worries and anxieties. But the mantra itself will take you like the bow will take an arrow and go. For this you have to let go. When I was young, I took archery lessons. Many foolish things. I still remember I had a teacher who was well accomplished with a long bow. It's a type of bow. And he said, I will now blindfold myself. He blindfolded himself like this. And I will shoot. And there was a target fixed on a tree, like a this target, and he shoot, and he was thinking like he was pulling it back, and we all his children, wow, what an archer. He shoot, and he missed the target by 10 meters. He said, I wanted to teach you, if you don't look, if you don't focus yourself, you will never you will never hit the target. Just in the same way, and I want to repeat this today, this is my thanks to my archery teacher, Gunnar Michelsen. If you don't focus yourself on chanting for the Lord's pleasure, then you might miss the target. It will be some good rhythm, maybe some nifty rhythm, some interesting smoky voice of the kirtan leader, some novel dancing, but it will not be the purification of the heart and the making a contact with Krishna. It will not be so much bhakti. For bhakti to happen, no, Rupa Goswami says, there needs to be, it's Krishna, it's a conscious effort involving body, mind and senses, and you do it with a certain intent that is to please Krishna. I think you know the verse, Anya Vilashita Shunyam Jnana Kamatyanavita Anukul Yena Krishnane Nu Shilanam Bhakti Uttamam. For bhakti to happen, you need the elements, and then it will be very, very nice. Now a good example is given here, and a thought-provoking example of Arjuna winning something very valuable by using his bow. And I would like to just tell you this in some detail. Another example given in this regard is that Arjuna, as a result of piercing the Adharamina, or the fish within the chakra, achieved the valuable gain of Draupadi. Similarly, if the arrow of chanting the holy name of the Lord, one pierces Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. By dint of performing this heroic activity of devotional service, one receives the benefit of returning back home, back to Godhead. You might be familiar, so I will go a little bit fast in the beginning. The Pandavas were the sons of Devatas. They came in the forest, and when their illustrious father Pandu died, the saints advised the Pandavas to go back to Hastinapur, the town where the king Dhritarashtra ruled in the absence of the ruler Pandu. Now, when the five Pandavas, looking like brilliant like flames, arrived at the gates of Hastinapur, all the citizens were blessed. Pandu's sons are alive. The five godly Pandavas are here. They are the rightful rulers. Dhritarashtra has only ruled, how do you say, as a representative, not the real one. And now the sons are here. They will take the rulership of the most powerful dynasty of the earth. All the citizens, they're celebrating this, except for Dhritarashtra and his 100 evil sons. These sons constantly conspired against the Pandavas, and finally, in the long succession, they invited them into a house, a palace that looked as beautiful as this building, more beautiful even. It was built of highly inflammable shellac. And in the midst of the night, they wanted to burn the sleeping Pandavas together with their mother, Kunti. Vidura gave Yudhishthira a hint. Be careful, you need to have a tunnel. it escaped the fire. And the Pandavas took this advice serious. Yudhishthira got a tunnel maker, and they made a tunnel which led through the underground out of this palace. So when the fateful day came, that the minister of Dhritarashtra realized his plan for assassinating the Pandavas and put the palace ablaze, the Pandavas were well prepared and escaped through a tunnel into anonymity. Is that an English word? No one knew them. They dressed as brahmanas gave away their royal ornaments. Their hair became matted, and they hid. They were in hiding. They were now divested of their kingdom. It was clear the Dhritarashtra and his 100 sons would constantly attempt to kill them. They needed to live in secrecy. Now, within that time, many things happened, but one thing which happened and is important for us today in this context of the lecture is that Vyasadeva came and said, "My dear boys, your fortune will turn. You are the rightful empress of the world. Now you are in hiding, but you should go to the Svayambara. Yes, I wanted to translate it into English. The occasion where the fireborn Draupadi will choose her husband in a contest. Thank you. All the kings of the world will be there, and Arjuna will win the contest. Contest. Thank you. Do this, and then you will marry Draupadi, and you will be aligned with the powerful king of her father, Draupad. So, this was a Svayambara. My dear devotees, an extra stadium had been built with many, many, many podiums. All the illustrious kings were there, and two very special personalities attended also, Krishna and Balaram, who had heard of the Pandavas, but who had never seen them. There was Kana, there was Duryodhana, there was Jarasandha, there was, you know, everyone. It was like as if, I do not know the modern president so well, but as if the American president is there, the German, which we always think of German, Germans are insignificant, the Latin American head of state, the South African, and Angela Merkel. So imagine, it was really, they were there, and they wanted to marry this most extraordinary and most beautiful woman, Draupadi. The contest was very fierce. There was a podium in the midst of the stadium. There was a bow there, the bow of Lord Vishnu. Was it Vishnu or Shiva? Shiva, a divine weapon. And then there was a basson with water. The target itself was on a long pole. It was a wooden fish, but the fish was not visible very easily because there was a rotating wheel. So the one who wanted to win the contest had to look at the mirror reflection, take aim somehow like this, and then shoot at the right moment that arrow which needed to go through a little hole, and then drop, bring the target down. It was an impossible feat. It was, and what made it most difficult, who can take even the bow of Lord Shiva and draw it? There were many, many men who needed to carry this bow inside. It was so impossible. So only the big Kshatriyas came. Many tried, but when they tried to strum the bow, they couldn't do it, and the bow just flipped back and threw them off the podest. Bang! Many, many. Finally, oh, I can't tell in all details, but I would love to do this. Finally, Duryodhana came, stepped forward, looked very arrogant, took the bow, and very easily strung it. That moment, Draupadi was trembling. Oh no! Not him! Because this Duryodhana was evil-minded. He had a twisted brain. He was arrogant and self-conceited. Duryodhana drew the bow. It was a hushed moment. No one spoke. Krishna said to Balaram, Duryodhana shot. The arrow passed through the hole, but it missed. Okay. All the content in one moment, some more tried and failed, but then they were all gone. And Trishtajuma said, My saintly sister is still here, and no one of you weaklings, the Kshatriyas, were successful. Is there anyone else? Is there anyone else? At this moment, a very strong young man was rising. He looked so beautiful. His eyes were long. He was dressed in the garb of a forest-dwelling ascetic. His hairs were matted, but his arms very strong. And he walked confidently. Everyone was riveted. He asked, is a Brahmin allowed to take part in the contest? Krishna's eyes were filling with tears of ecstasy. Well, said Trishtajuna, yes, a Brahmin can marry a Kshatriya lady, but a Kshatriya man cannot marry a Brahmin lady, so yes. Then the learned Brahmana said, yes, yes, it can do. The youth went to the boat. He did a production. Then he bowed down to the weapon of Lord Shiva. He went up the podest. He easily strung the bow. He drew the arrow, he took aim, and without any long delay, he just shot, and the thing, the Adaramiya, the wooden arrow, the wooden
fish came tumbling down. At that moment, all the brahmanas waved their, let's not do it because their garments. Wow! Both of us! You know, we are the best. Our one, yes, and they were very, very happy. There was a hushed silence. From the contesting Chakyas, there came one verse. No! They rushed forward, aiming arrows. At this moment, the youth just turned around and fired so fast, you couldn't really see. The bow was always drawn to full capacity. Then others came, and then all of a sudden, another Brahmana, almost double as big, came. He uprooted a tree, a Kshatriya, and he began to beat all the powerful Kshatriyas, the tree. Krishna just laughed to Balaram and said, "Our nephews! This is them! The Pandavas!" So, we could go on, but time is there. This is an analogy of using the bow to gain something very, very valuable. My dear devotees, I would like to encourage you to make a study of this verse in your private time, 7:15:42. I would like you to consider this as a serious practice, and I want to just request Gaura Hari to come, because in that 1 minute I would like to really teach you what this means in practical application. Most of us will forget it the moment they go out of the hall, because we are not so thoughtful always. But we want to now get the essence of it, something which we can do. I request all of you to sit properly.
Hare
Praised by many reviewers as something really groundbreaking. And I think for us as disciples and great disciples of Prabhupada, it really paints a wonderful and accessible picture of Srila Prabhupada. This book is available at the book table, which is staffed by Kosha Rupa. There is another devotee who also here's another book, Harmony and the Bhagavad Gita by her. Please, I've personally read these two books, and I want to say it's a wonderful read. Beg, borrow, or steal. Somehow get it in other words. Also, it will remind you of proper chanting. It's very artfully done. You may obtain this t-shirt as a good reminder, and it will be very inspiring. It is available also, I guess, on the t-shirt tables or wherever. Good. Main point is, we wish you a wonderful Sadhu Sangha. May you be blessed by the Lord Jagannath to significantly move forward in your relationship to Lord Krishna. Please excuse me, I took a little time, extra time. I cannot answer questions now. You please proceed to the prasadam so that you are well nourished back here on time. Hare Krishna!
So, you're a hurry. We come to melody.
Maharaj is wonderful for us.
Thank you.
Thank you for reminding what we